Monk House. I'll let Nick go into this part a little bit more than me, but it kept coming up on our list of places to go, but originally we weren't going to do it. There was another place in England that we really wanted to do. But what makes the Black Monk House so special is this is a case that goes back to 1966. So it's 50 years of a haunting, which is pretty crazy. And what's nuts about it is sometimes hauntings stop after a family moves out or, you know, they kind of die down over the years. This is a haunting that has been actively happening for 50 years. And it started with the Pritchards, Jean, Joe, Diane, and Phil family. The kids were early teenage years. And when the family was away, the son stayed behind with his grandmother, and dust, like chalk, started to appear in midair, like height level, and fall to the ground. And they had no explanation for it. And they thought it was weird, but they didn't really think it was paranormal at that time until things started ramping up. So they would have, you know, objects disappear, then reappear. People would get touched. They would hear voices. And they lovingly called this thing Fred. You know, they kind of normalized it. From there, it went away. But when it came back, and it did come back, it came back with a vengeance. And they started getting attacked. And Diane, who was the daughter of the family, claims that she was choked and dragged up the stairs by her neck. So that was kind of the worst that the family was experiencing. From there, Jean actually stayed there until within the last 10 years she moved out, and investigators have been coming in ever since, and they have had horrendous stories about getting scratched, getting pushed, seeing dark figures in their photos. There's one photo that somebody has that it actually kind of looks like this weird demonic figure in a doorway. So this place is notoriously known, and England's known about it forever, and America has kind of been closed off to it because we constantly hear about Enfield is the big one we hear about, but there's other ones in England as well, and I'll let Nick talk about kind of why we chose this one specifically.
Yeah, Pontefract is an interesting location in England. It actually started with it dates back way to the Civil War, the executions of the kings, mm-hmm. the castle really close by, but there's a ton of history. It's just not about the house, it's about the land in general. And there's a legend about the monk, mm-hmm. who's known as the Black Monk, a.k.a. Fred. And this is kind of where the stories get adapted and legends build up. But we go there because it's known to be the most violent poltergeist in the history of Europe. And that's what really fascinated us as paranormal researchers. We're always looking to put ourselves and embed ourselves in a living condition that is labeled as the most haunted. Because we want to push the paranormal forward, and in order to do that, you have to go seek out locations like this. So we're looking to discover something new in the paranormal field rather than being redundant and trying to say ghosts don't exist or ghosts do exist. We're in the middle saying let's discover something new as a human race and try to see if we could actually say this is made up of X, Y, and Z, this is what this thing is, or we possibly just have no explanation for that and we just don't understand it yet. And that's the fascinating thing about our life and our personal journey is we don't know what happens when we die. And for this location, it really struck a nerve with me because I think it was more personal than anything else I've ever done before, especially living in a location for 100 hours. I've never done that, so that was extreme in nature. I mean, living in any location for 100 hours is crazy. So this actually hit a nerve with me. From season one, Paranormal Lockdown, we went to a Hinsdale house in New York, and that really affected us. Stuff started following us home. Things were happening at both of our houses. And we started documenting it, and I had a lot of home footage and security cameras catching apparitions in my basement, stuff like that. And you'll see it in this epic special that I call it unraveled like a documentary,
yeah,
straight up,
yeah.
From a year in like the making. And we compiled all this, and it led us to the Black Monk House, and it really drew us to that location. And I think that's what's scary about this thing is there's something lurking that is negative in nature that draws you in. And really, it takes a hold of you like a sponge, and it absorbs your own energy, and it really hits you when you least expect it. And that's what really affected all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, it really struck a nerve with us, and we did not expect, living there for like 5 days straight, 100 hours, that we would capture some of the most incredible evidence we've ever seen.
Yeah, it's worth noting, too, that it's a place that's been on our radar for a long time. Obviously, it's really famous. But as we started researching it, it started coming up more and more and more. There's really no option but to make it into a longer investigation, a more in-depth investigation, because it became very personal, and it became more than just another show. So we knew we had to kind of blow it up into a 100-hour investigation and get deeper into it.
I think there's something about, you know, both as an individual, as an actor, there's something about a person that draws into this kind of, you know, paranormal kind of idea. And I was curious, because you mentioned negative energy before, if you feel that, you know, you thrive more on this idea of negativity to feed you for the show, or, you know, what draws you to this kind of a concept in the first place to investigate?
Yeah, actually, we're all very positive in nature, and it's kind of weird how we go to the negative, right? It's always like, what's the dark, negative, gloomy location? But it's not necessarily why we pick the locations. We actually pick them for research, because we know negative locations hold some sort of an impact, some sort of energy that still lingers, and we're getting more evidence at those locations. But a lot of our locations are positive. People, like some locations in season 2 of Paranormal Lockdown coming up, people will say, oh, there's a demon here. We're like, okay, that word gets tossed around a lot, right? And we go into the location, we find out it's just a child or a human being that was once living that died, and now is a spirit energy that's lashing out trying to get someone's attention. But they don't understand, they're labeling it as a demon, but it's not necessarily a demon that we come to find out. So I think it gets mixed up a little too much, and I think because of horror movies and the idea of these theories of something so negative and like disturbing, and I think the scariest thing is the things that we don't understand as human beings, the mystery of it all, you know? And I think, what is lurking in the darkness? Is it going to get you like the boogeyman jumping out? But I can say with the Black Monk House, 30 East Drive in England, there was absolutely something negative there. And the way I can say that is living through the experience with living there, you can't just go to that location for one day, 2 days. It's one of those locations that it really sticks with you. It's just, it drew us in, and it really just hit us hard. So that negative force, you know, that I kind of walk away from.
Yeah, it's also in theology, specifically the Catholic religion, they believe that these darker things, these more negative things, once one of them knows you, they all know you. So if you do this work, or if you live in a house that has this kind of activity, you'll always kind of be drawn back in. Even if you don't want to, there will be some sort of circumstance that draws you back in. And it's interesting, because I think that's what we experienced with the Black Monk House, not realizing it at the time, you know, but it's certainly something I've seen in my career with my other colleagues that I've worked with. It's like these things just pull you back in even when you try to get away. So it's a really interesting concept, and we explore that a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of like the best analogy I can put. You ever hang out with, like, good friends or bad friends, and you feel that vibe and that energy that people have? And then they always try to get you to do something bad, and it's always itching at you. Like, some negative thing is itching. It's kind of the same thing with the Black Monk House, and what Katrina's talking about, this worldly spiritual kind of war that we're up against, is there's always something negative lurking.
There's something attractive about it.
Yeah, and it's trying to draw you in and make you mess up in life, or make you, like, fall into that step, or, like, it pushes you into that mentality. And I think that is what the scariest thing is for me personally. It's not the ghost jumping out, or the thing that you don't understand, or the bump in the night on the wall or whatever. You might jump and be startled as a human being. Anybody does that. But it's the negative energy that feels like it can overtake your body, your psyche, your mind, that psychology behind it, that really disturbs me. Because that I don't fully understand. You're like battling it internally, you know? It's very strange.
And when you mention, you know, working 100 hours on set, do you ever experience fatigue eventually? Does it become a point where it's just too much?
So really quick, let's forget the paranormal for a second,
yeah.
Right? Just picture yourself living in a 100-hour location in a house that you're locked in, confined to. You can't get out, right? And we only have an amount of food, like bars, granola bars, some cereal or whatever, and every day we have to wake up. Maybe we go 30 hours, and then we sleep for 30 minutes of REM sleep. And I actually calculated. I actually had a bracelet on that monitored my heart rate, my brain, my everything. And it actually said in REM sleep, after 26 hours of being up, I slept for 30 minutes. And then I got up. And it was realistic. It was because a loud bang happened behind my head. And I woke up, and I saw the door opened on its own on camera. So it's pretty wild. But there's a whole, like, oh, my God, living in an environment that's so gritty and gross and the dust and...
Yeah, there was one location we just went to for season 2 where it was so bad. You guys know which one I'm talking about. And I had so our sinuses were, like, killing us because of all this dust. So I went to go blow my nose, and literally a little cloud of dust came out, followed by blood. I was just like, this is how we do.
Yeah, and I think at the Black Monk House, you'll see in the episode, like, it's our episode is so raw and gritty that we're showing you, like, compiled, like,
best parts of it with the story. But there's a moment where I'm sitting there and I feel just so gross and disgusting because we don't shower for those days.
Yeah.
There's no working water. And we're just living out of our, like, same clothes. It's gross. I think one time I took my shoe off because you get scared. Like, you leave your shoes on when you sleep. You lay there. You wake up and you're in your same clothes and in your shoes.
Sounds like Survivor.
It's totally a supernatural Survivor. And I took my shoe off and my white toe was white because the blood circulation was starting to cut off, you know? And I'm sitting there and you guys are looking at me and I don't feel right, but it was more because of the energy instead of the environment that was messing me up. And it comes in waves, like that energy you feel. And I felt sick and I think my nose started bleeding, like, randomly. And I think I went up to the bathroom and I was, like, bloody nose or whatever.
Yeah, Black Monk House, too. I remember specifically being really tired in the house all the time. Like, within the first 5 minutes we were in there, remember the walkthrough? It was just, like, so heavy. And I remember there was one time I sat on the couch and I just fell asleep. Like, I sat on the couch and I fell asleep, but it was like the first day, and I shouldn't have even been tired because England's 5 hours ahead, so I should have been good. But it was something with that house is just so strange that it affects me physically.
Yeah, we always joke that it's like the worst camping trip ever.
Yeah,
a lot of these places are dusty and dirty, and you just can't leave. I, luckily, on the regular season, am able just to go home, go to the hotels, and these two stay overnight.
Yeah.
But at the Black Monk House, because we physically chain locked ourselves into the house to make sure there was no getting in or out, I just sleep there, unfortunately, in the equipment room. And it was disgusting. And
that
it
was
one
true.
Of the first
times, too.
It was the first time, and it was that experience of, like, there's that claustrophobia. There's the physical, you want to just get outside and get a breath of fresh air, and you can't. And there's that question, how much does that weigh into what you're experiencing there? But it also, it's something we took into account with these bracelets they were wearing to see how their physical condition was while we were there.
And it's great because we always look for the psychology behind it. That's what I find so fascinating is, as a human being, how's the brain work? How's the body function? What is the breaking point? And that's what I always say. She's like, all right, we have to actually go sleep now in the most haunted room we just heard our stories about. You know, your brain starts racing as you go to sleep. And I go, what's the worst that can happen? Now, that's a bad going joke that we have going on, because she's like, the worst that can happen.
Here, let me give you a list.
I can be ripped out of my bed and dragged.
Yeah,
like the Pritchards.
Yeah.
The daughter of the Pritchards. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very frightening, especially the feelings that we had and the sickness. I kept feeling like I was going to throw up every second I sat down.
Yeah.
I think at one point I was going to vomit.
You looked like you were going to hurl. Yeah.
It was the worst feeling that I've had in a long time. That was negative.
Yeah.
And I hate that, you know, because we try to be positive, we try to keep our mindset grounded and be logical about things, but when your body feels something, you can't deny, like, what you feel, and it's so hard to describe sometimes with people that are watching at the comfort of their home,
mm-hmm.
and it's warm, or you're under your blankets, and you had a shower, and then we're here in this gritty environment, we're like, we're bleeding and vomiting, and like, going through this horrible, like, camping trip. I know. Honestly, we love it. We love and have a passion for the paranormal and all worldly weird things.
Right.
And we're just on some massive journey that we believe this is what we were destined to do. And we talk about this all the time. Even when the cameras aren't rolling, even on our airplane rides, our trains, at home, with our family.
Yeah.
We wake up in the middle of the night, we theorize about life, we're just interested in about, like, the whole conceptual idea about life, death, what happens, what's in between, where does energy go when this body dies. It fascinates me, and I love talking to people like you, because that's what gets my mind working. As you can tell, I ramble, because I get excited, you know, this is what we love to do.
Now I have a question. So, is there anything that, like, you had to turn your camera off, or just run, or do you feel, like, a sense of, okay, we can't shoot it because, like, I felt physically ill, or, like, is there any one of those moments I had to just have to stop because it's too intense?
I always say keep the cameras on. I think at one point you go, Nick, do you want to stop? And Rob's like, we should cut the cameras, it's getting really bad.
Yeah.
And I go, I don't care what happens, just keep going, no matter what happens.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we know what we signed up to do, right? So why would we stop cameras? It doesn't make sense to me, so always keep the cameras going. But there's times where you react because we're humans, and you're going to react when you get hurt.
Yeah.
When something lashes out, something attacks us, something physically, like, harms us, or you feel ill. But we have multiple cameras running all the time.
to document it. So no matter what happens, we're going to document it.
And that's the whole point of the show, is to document it. So if we turned off the cameras, I don't really feel like we would be doing our job.
Right.
You know, but it's because, you know, somebody might watch our Black Monk investigation who's been there and say, oh my gosh, that happened exactly to me, exactly where they are, same thing. And then that's interesting for us as investigators. Here's somebody that we didn't know that's coming forward saying that they had the same experience. And that's stuff that we can start compiling as we look at, like, a location. And that's interesting for our research.
And that's why we have him here, because I was so used to filming everything myself, like, being Dustin John or whatever. And now it's like, let's have all the arsenal of equipment we can possibly set up. So we're actually getting into, like, 3D mapping. We're getting into thermal cameras. And you can talk more on the equipment side, but that's why we have Rob, too, to document anything that's happening to us, because we might become fatigued or stuff might happen to us, so he can document us and vice versa. So we're always rolling on every single camera, every single piece of equipment you can see. And wait till you see the Black Monk episode, because we actually have an arsenal of equipment. We had more equipment we couldn't even fit in the kitchen at some point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're trying to take it to the next level and try to think outside the box rather than being redundant and trying to push the paranormal forward.
Yeah. And so this goes back, 2 years ago now when we were first developing the show. You came to me and said, what is your ideal equipment package to do what we do? And we approached it with, all right, we don't want to leave for 3 days because one night isn't enough. We need, what's the best equipment we can have in order to capture what we need to capture? And we approached the show from that perspective of, we're shooting in 6K in 16.5 stop dynamic range. And we're not just shooting in the IR spectrum, we're shooting in the full spectrum. So if something happens in visible light, we're catching it. If something happens in the IR spectrum, we're catching it. And with the 16.5 stops of dynamic range, we can really dig into those shadows and pose and zoom in on something if it does happen deep in the shadows. So we don't miss anything on set. So there's a lot of... Every step we've taken along the way, as we put together the gear package, as we put together how we're going to approach the show, it was completely from the perspective of investigating, pushing the paranormal forward, rather than here's your budget, put a show together from that. So we've always said it's basically the paranormal investigation show for paranormal investigators.
Yeah, and it's, I think what's really important about the cameras that we use is I constantly get asked the question, does the paranormal exist and why don't we have any, like, footage of a ghost showing up on a camera? And the thing that nobody asks after that is, well, maybe we're using the wrong type of equipment. Maybe we don't have the right type of equipment when we're out investigating. So that's what I think is really important with what we're doing, because we've captured stuff on camera. We have a mist from Franklin Castle. We have that creeper from Trans-Allegheny. And those are things that I've never seen in my 10 years of investigating. Nobody's ever shown me a piece of footage like that. So I think as we progress, we're getting closer and closer to having the right technology. But just thinking in terms of, well, it can only be captured on a night vision camera, that's limiting yourself. And you have to think about all the things that scientists can detect that need special equipment. It's the same thing with the paranormal. It's something that still has to be discovered, and we're hopefully getting closer to it.
Was the idea of the paranormal something that appealed to you in your youth, or this goes to all of you?
Yeah, for me, I grew up in haunted houses, so the first time I remember that something was weird in my house, I was probably about 3 or 4 years old, and I was playing with a puzzle at the bottom of the stairs, so you go right down the stairs, and I was right there, and I would follow my sister everywhere. She's older than I am, and I was always scared to be upstairs by myself, and I would not sleep in my room by myself. I always had to sleep with her, so obviously, she's 4 years older, she got annoyed by this. And this particular night, she wanted to come downstairs without her little sister following her. So she started to walk downstairs. She peeked through the banister because it looked right into my room. And she saw me sitting on my bed. And she said, I turned and I looked right at her. And they made eye contact. And then she said, okay, she's in her room. She's not going to bother me. She comes down the stairs and I'm sitting right there. And she said, Katrina, how did you do that? I'm like, do what? And we went back and forth. And then we kind of put it together that somebody in my room that's not supposed to be there who looked like me, you know, and from there those experiences kept happening. So it's just always something, kind of going back to your original question, is something that keeps drawing you in.
At age 8, I actually fell from a tree and ripped open the whole side of my arm, and half inch of hitting my artery. I remember passing out and getting up and walking to my mom and saying I love you, and then passing out and just seeing all these faces circling around me. And I guess doctors said I was, like, this close from dying. My mom saved my life by taking off her shirt, tying up my arm, and my bone was literally hanging out. And she picked me up. Like, you know, you hear about those mother stories about picking cars up and stuff. That was her. and she brought me to the hospital, and basically after 100 stitches and whatnot, saved my life. A year later, once I recovered and had the stitches, I was a swimmer, so they put me back in the water, and I swam and, you know, rehabbed it and all that stuff. And I remember coming home from school before my mom, and I walk in the house, and she's coming home right after me, and I walk upstairs, and I felt really nervous for some reason. I don't know if it was my childhood, just being scared by yourself in a home, but I walk upstairs, and I just remember turning the corner and looking in the kitchen, and there was this glass sliding door, and there's this shadow man just standing there. And it scared me to death so bad that I ran out the house, down the stairs, out the back door into my neighbor's yard. And I stood there, and a couple of minutes later, my mom, I see her drive home and go in, and I freaked out thinking somebody was in our house, because as a kid, you think a burglar or somebody like that. So I went back in and I saw my mom and there was nobody. I don't know if that was my childhood imagination, but it stuck with me all these years and it kind of got me fascinated in the paranormal. And not until I started talking to my grandmother about all things paranormal, I was actually really fascinated with aliens and UFOs and all those cool things. And then I got into ghosts a little bit later and my grandmother would talk about all that stuff. And then that's when I started to search it out. And I guess this kind of picked me and it took me on this destination where I am now in life.
Destination America.
Destination America. Good way to tag it.
Yeah, so for me, I have an interesting perspective of I was never into paranormal stuff. I mean, I grew up a film buff. I loved horror movies. I loved scary movies and stuff. But this is my 10th paranormal show I've shot. I've shot all the stuff you guys have seen on TV. But I never had that moment where I was completely like ripped from my comfort zone and said 100% yes, I'm a believer. So going into this series with these two, I actually had a pretty clear idea of like, all right, I know what's what. I know the answers to everything. And it literally, you saw it happen if you saw the Trans-Allegheny episode. It's that moment where I'm completely ripped from my comfort zone and I'm forced to stare at something on my screen that's not there and say, what the hell am I looking at? And that was actually that moment where I've gone from thinking I had all the answers to the perspective we all should have, which is, I just don't know. I have no idea what's out there, and if you think you know what's out there, you need to spend 72 hours locked in one of these places, because it will make you question everything.
What makes this lockdown different from the other lockdowns?
100 hours we're locked in, and I think we're up against something far sinister than we fully understood. It rattled us, even back to our homes. It affected both of all of our personal families, and I think that's what the dangerous thing was. Is we were kind of playing with fire and we were just feeling that.
Yeah, I still feel like affected by it. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
I actually took, so we were in England and I took a couple days off and I went to London because I'd never been. And I went to Westminster Abbey and I asked for a private blessing by one of their priests because I was so shaken by what happened at the Black Monk House. And I'm not even Catholic, but I'm just like, please, will you just bless me? And so he sat with me and he asked me, he's like, why do you feel like you need protection? And I told him, and he was just like, uh-huh. He was like, okay, then. but it was, you know, I still definitely feel like there's, like, a negative cloud that's been over me since Black Monk, and it's,
we've accepted
I don't know,
it.
Yeah, honestly.
I mean, that's the bottom line. We had this really heart-to-heart, the three of us, and even my cousin who comes over my house all the time, Justin, he was even saying, like, my basement's wicked haunted. And I have no reason. My house is brand new, 2004. There's nothing there. It could be a land, but I highly doubt the land. I think it's something that really followed us home, and it really has affected us. And I was always one that didn't get too superstitious with, like, paging and salt. But I'll tell you what, I started doing it. When you can't explain, you can't get rid of it. I started doing sage. It brings it back down to here, but then it builds back up again. It's random. And it continues with us, and we get affected, and we'll have moments where we'll, like, almost break down. We'll talk to each other, like, heart to heart, or we'll be theorizing, or it'll be, like, randomly, Katrina, what do you think about, like, that?
Yeah.
Or have you had this stuff? We had a weird experience.
We had a shared experience.
Oh, my God.
At our own
meant
home.
To be.
Yeah.
Like, we just thought the same thing right
there.
Yeah,
we were, so he lives outside of Boston, and I live outside of Philadelphia, and there was one night, and I think it was, like, 5 o'clock in the morning, something like around 4, and I woken up and I went downstairs and from my living room, you know, you had to go living room, dining room, kitchen, bathroom, right? So I was going to the bathroom, and when I came back, it was still dark out, and so the room was dark, and I felt this overwhelming feeling that somebody was just standing there staring me down, and it was so weird because it felt like everything changed. I had no sense of time. I had no sense of my balance. It felt like I was in a funhouse tunnel, and I felt something against me on the side. And I ran to the light in the dining room, turned it on, and looked around, and there was nothing there. And I said out loud, I said, if anybody's here, you're not welcome in my house, go away, blah, 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 blah. And I went back, and I tried to lay down to get some sleep, and Nick texted me that day, and he had a weird experience at his house, and I was like, at the same time, we had an experience.
Yeah, it was really creepy, and I think that's why things are connected. Like, it knows us, whatever it is, you know, that we can define as. But I think locations that we go to, we pick up on lingering effects of these energies and these things. And they know us by name. We'll have it coming through on our devices randomly. Even Rob will sit there, like, more in a skeptical mindset and say, okay, wait a second. How can your name be said to that device? And I don't understand. Now, what's the mechanics? How is it made up? And then we'll get into that discussion for a while, you know? And it's so weird how these things happen. But that's what we're looking for, is why these things affect us. Why are these things happening to us at our home? But I think certain people are destined for certain things, like you guys, interviewing us. You know, it's vice versa. It's like this kind of quest in our past meet on this weird vibrational wave that we all live in this universe. So it's really interesting.
Now, when you were growing up, did you guys have this sixth sense for, like, seeing things or feeling things? Because for me personally, quick, like, because I feel things. And one time I was at a friend's house, I told her, like, back of her wall, there's a staircase, and I was right. And I felt things, like, I was at the restaurant, and it was like, I told my friend, like, we can't sit there, like, I felt present ghosts, and I was like, we gotta go, that's evil. Like, for me, I feel that kind of stuff. I don't know, for you guys, it's more sixth sense.
Yeah.
Like, I feel, like,
well,
I feel your vibration, like, my heart's racing right now. Like, you guys been chased by a man and stuff before, right?
Yeah.
Like a dark, like, black beard man before.
Right.
There's like two ways I like to explain it to people. It's, some people are born with amazing eyesight, and other people need a little help, you know? So it's kind of the same thing with your sixth sense. Some people are just more in tune with it.
Like, right now I'm just like, I feel all of your energy is just like, my heart is just racing so bad. Like,
right, yeah, and we know energy is real, you know, and energy is real.
Yeah, you produce kinetic
people
energy
produce
when you move, when you hold
energy.
That microphone. Yeah.
So it's not, the idea of the paranormal, I don't really think is that crazy, but I think people have it in their head that it's crazy because it's not fully documented yet as far as the whole spectrum. And people also hold on to different belief systems that tell them that the paranormal isn't real. So we kind of cuckoo it away when there is something happening. We just don't know what it is. But to answer your question more specifically, I think, you've always had stuff happen to you that way. I've had stuff happen to me that way since I was a kid, like dreams that come true, seeing people that aren't there, hearing voices, that kind of thing. And just like, or meeting somebody and knowing things about them that I couldn't possibly know. And I think the longer I'm in the field, the more in tune it kind of gets. And I had a crazy, at the one location we did this season so far, was like really, really connected to stuff. Yeah, and was really accurate about the things that went on there that I didn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think everybody has the ability. It's just the more you kind of open yourself up to it, the more you become better at it. So
like meditation, you know, the best analogy I could give is, If you've never used a computer before, you start using it, and every day you keep using that computer, then you get better and better at the computer, right? It's the same thing. You focus your energy, your sense, whatever you feel, and you hone in on that, kind of like meditation state. But we started to learn, the more and more locations we went to, we started becoming more sensitive to energy, things that we pick up on. Like, I'll get the goosebumps or the electricity, and we're like, whoa, you feel that? I feel that here. Yeah, you can feel, like, the tragedy or the sadness or the anger. And then we'll roll on a recorder. We'll be like, Rob, film the camera here, or we'll just set up a thermal camera, anything else to document that type of evidence to go off of what our bodies are. Because the body is the best piece of equipment.
Yeah.
You know, that's, like, we don't understand all of it, right? We don't understand the mind, the brain, or how we function and work and that static charge you get, but we know it's happening. So that's what we're trying to do, is document and validate those experiences that we're having.
And it's the same way, too. I'm sure you guys have all experienced this. Is, have you ever, like, walked into a room and people were fighting, but they're not fighting when you walk in the room, but you can feel that something's off? It's the same thing, you know, people give off energy, and it's the same way we think, at least, with spirits or whatever these things are, whatever these entities are, there's some energy that's being produced or left behind from people that were once there, and you can still feel that.
So in your guys' whole careers, are you guys ever afraid or have been, like, afraid of possession, being possessed by a spirit yourself?
So yes. Possession, typically speaking, with as far as possession of, like, a demon, they work in phases. So there's a couple different steps. So the first one is infestation, and that's when these things enter your life. And there's oppression, and you'll hear people say, I just felt sad, I felt angry all the time. And it's basically, according to theology, it's their way of breaking you down. Because they need you to be broken down in order to take over your body. So eventually somebody says, you know what, I've had enough, I don't care. Or they say, attack me, but leave my kids alone. They do these little invitations to these things. And then you have what you call possession. And then the last step of it is perfect possession, where no amount of holy water, no amount of exorcism, nothing will take care of the thing, and the person usually dies in a very odd way. So there's that kind of possession. Then there's channeling, which
channeling
is more, you know, something coming through you, and maybe you're being influenced that way. And I've seen psychics do it before, psychics, and reputable psychics, there's, you know, that we've worked with. But I've never really worried about that too much, because I feel pretty much protected for the most part.
Yeah, I think, like, it's like going into a location and being in the mental state of, like, staying positive, but I think that's the one thing that frightens me, like I was talking about, is that negative kind of effect where it can overtake your own psyche, your mind, your body, and you have that kind of spiritual war happening internally. I've had, like, channeling. I'm not a sensitive or a psychic or claim to be any of that stuff, but I've had those things happen to me where you feel and you open yourself up too much and you kind of let go of your body. And then you have this kind of negative force enter your body and you're kind of, like, fighting it back. And then you have to ground yourself out again. Whoa, I feel sick. I don't understand what's happening. You start to kind of black out a little bit. That's what scares me. It's something that you have to try to fight where you don't see it. And it's that negative force you're going against.
What scares you, Rob? Nothing anymore?
Seeing me at, at 6 a.m.
Yeah. For the most part, going into these places, my job, my entire role is just to document their experiences. And what scares me most in these places is when, you know, I'm living through this little screen that I'm filming on. And anybody that's ever been a shooter or a director of photography knows that. You just get wrapped up and you feel like you're almost watching what's happening right in front of you. You're watching it on this screen. But when things happen there that, like, reach out and touch you, or you hear something or feel something, that completely rips you out of that, that, like, trance you're in doing that, is one of the most jarring things you could ever experience. And that's happened a few times in this show, and those are the moments where I'm just completely shaken.
What was the most violent thing that's happened to you guys on the show?
I can't talk about it because it's in the Black Monk episode. But it was, I mean, I wanted to cry so bad. I was so scared. I was really scared because it's not something that I've had happen to me before. And when it, you know, I worked with clients for a long time, families in haunted houses, and they would always describe this to me. And it's, you know, it's one thing to hear about it and sympathize with somebody, but it's another thing to have it happen to yourself. And when it does, your brain tries to do these, like, mental gymnastics of trying to figure out what was this, what caused this, you know, how can this be? Is there a natural explanation for it? And when you're left with no answers other than paranormal, it's, even though I do this for a living, it's still so hard sometimes to accept that something I can't see to do this.
I was frightening sleeping there, knowing all the stories and walking into it and just being by yourself, because we isolate ourselves, and we'll isolate. I'll be in, like, I think the first night I slept in, like, the most haunted room that I was having effects, and I felt like I want to throw up all day. So I'm like, I'm going to put myself in that situation. I don't know why we do that, but I guess we do it both. I guess it's documented evidence.
Right.
But it's the worst, you know, it's the worst just sleeping in those environments, because you have to sleep. I mean, it's unrealistic to go 30 hours, and your body's going to black out eventually, so you have to lay down and let your body rest. And I think the one thing walking away from the Black Monk House that was so frightening is how it affected my family so much. You know, it's that ripple effect that kind of went out of the Black Monk House. It's a bigger thing. And that's why I say it's more like a documentary that unfolds, because that's what I feel like it's been happening for the last year and a half, of us just kind of documenting it. But my family knows, we know how to protect ourselves, we know what's going on, so, you know, this thing is trying hard to just destroy everything's path and try to control us, trying to break us down, trying to make us feed into that fear and that negativity and all that stuff, and just, colliding on this different Richter scale that we've never saw coming.
It's interesting you're attracted to, you know, areas of isolation, considering you seem like a pretty extroverted, you know, kind of guy.
I know. It's, you know what, it's weird. I think sometimes, too, we get so fascinated and wrapped up in the idea of, I'm such an extremist, so I'm like, you know, put me in that environment, put me in those things, because I want the challenge, I guess. Maybe that's what I seek out a little too much. Maybe that's why it affects me a lot sometimes, is because I'm looking for that moment to say, that's what I was looking for in my life. You know, that's what was going to break me. Because and she's always saying, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, there was this, we don't talk about it too much, but there was this one thing you'll see in Paranormal Lockdown Season 2 that is going to blow people's minds away, where I decided to crawl into this place, this crawl space, and they were like, what are you doing? I went in by myself because I felt like drawn to this area, like we were missing something the owner wasn't telling us.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we discovered something that is going to blow people away. That's actually under an investigation now.
Yeah.
So.
But it was very dangerous. Like, the owner was like, I don't want to give it too much away, but he's like, you could get very, very hurt doing this. Like, physically, it's not safe to do this. Nick's like, I'll do it.
I don't even think I asked. I think I just did it. And it's like, that's just how I am. I've always been, that's why I ripped open my arm when I was a kid. That's why I got 3 stitches in the back of my head for being stupid and falling out of a tree. You know, it's just, you know, I try to mature as I get older, but sometimes I can't help it. I go back to that. I need to explore that. I need to be adventurous. I need to go in there and try to discover something new. I'm willing to push myself to that breaking point because, you know what, life is short. And I want to be that staple stone to, like, put the mark on this earth when we leave, when it's my time. Hopefully it's not then.
Yeah,
in a crawl space.
In a crawl space somewhere.
On this promo ad right here, I'll just show it real quick. You're looking into the horizon, right? And what do you think you see without giving anything away? What do you think you see when you look at that?
I think I see life after death, and hopefully there's a better place than here. You know? I hope there's a better place. And I think we were also joking around, like, hey, what's over there? Not sure.
Yeah.
we have a lot of fun, too. We joke. We have to be lighthearted, because if we're not lighthearted, then we're not human, and we're just too serious sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're too dark in sense of humor.
Yeah, but we have to be, I feel, because, like, we're doing, like, I mean, who does this stuff? Like, you know, like, we're the only people in the world right now who's doing these types of investigations, as crazy as they are. I mean, there's definitely other investigators who are wonderful investigators out there doing this stuff, but to confine yourself to a property for this amount of time, it's crazy. And the only people in the world that can understand what we go through is each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think we find comfort in our dark humor and our weird sense of funniness when we're together at 3 a.m., you know, and we're completely exhausted and dirty. So...
What am I looking at over here?
Yeah. I think, you know what, this is my question for the paranormal, and this is probably what I'm thinking about. You know, if somebody asked me, we just got asked, what would you say to skeptics? And it's always such a funny question to me because I get the argument from skeptics. I totally do. Like, where is the proof? Why haven't we found this yet? But it's like, we don't have everything figured out. So I always ask someone, like, do you think we have everything on this earth figured out? Because we don't, and a scientist will admit that to you. We don't know how 90% of our brain works. We haven't explored 90% of our oceans. We're still finding creatures that we thought were extinct or popping up, you know. So there's so much to be explored. So why not the paranormal? You know, we know people have these experiences, but we haven't gone further to say, what are they? We just keep brushing them off as they're nothing. So that's kind of my biggest question, this is, what is this? What is this?
We only have a few minutes left, so I want to give everyone some time.
That's it. We answered all the life and death questions.
Yeah.
We're out. I just disappeared.
Yeah.
So you guys are still working on solving the whole, I mean, you guys have obviously said that you're still being affected by it.
Yeah.
So you guys feel that you're still trying to, like, solve this whole mystery of why it's following you?
This is kind of a risk you take when you work in the field, is that, again, you know, we're still trying to figure out why this is. I mean, there's theology that tells us this is why it is, but, you know, is that really accurate? What we do know is that we've been having effects ever since we worked on a certain case. and then it's been following us, and we've been having issues in our home, and, you know, we both feel like there's this negative kind of thing lurking over us. So, I mean, will we ever truly get the answer to that? You know, I don't know, but I think it's definitely something we talk about a lot, and we're trying to figure out.
Yeah, okay. We're talking to the owner right now at Hinsdale House. He owns the location where it really affected us, Dan Clare. And he even says right now there's a bunch. They turned it into a paranormal research center because it's super active.
Wow.
The whole land is active, even the woods behind the land. You can see that in season one of Paranormal Lockdown. And he writes me all the time, and he's talking to us, and he says that he'll have people over there, and have recorders rolling, different devices, all sorts of different things. He says they keep getting evidence that says, "Where's Nick?" coming through. And he'll always tell me that, you know. And I kind of laugh at it, but I'm like, wait a second. It's kind of scary if you think about it, you know. So we're still investigating these certain things that kind of draw us back to those type of locations that have a real impact. It's totally different than, you know, the haunted house on 4th Street over there that is known to have, you know, grandmother who floats down the staircase or whatever. This is a location that has so much history. Dates back to the Puritans, the Native Americans, burial ground, wars, all sorts of different stuff that lingers. And there's a dark forest that they call it, because everything in the middle of the forest is dead. And it looks like there's almost like burial mounds around it. So, you know, you have a location that has such an impact in history that ripple effects into what we know as paranormal phenomena that now occur, and that is ripple effecting in our dimension and our reality and stuff as time moves forward.
What advice do you have for amateur investigators looking to break into? One, work with people you trust. That's my biggest one, because you will be relying on their eyewitness account. So you have to be able to trust that they're reasonable and logical thinkers. Do your research. That's a big one. You know, I think sometimes the paranormal field gets a bad rap, and I think a lot of that is, you know, sometimes people enter the field maybe not knowing as much as they should, or they're trespassing, things like that. So you need to do your research. You need to be respectful of the places that you go to. Get permission. I mean, it's normally really easy to get permission. So, you know, do that kind of stuff. And kind of think of what else.
Be a logical thinker. You know, not
definitely.
Everything is paranormal.
Right.
We know that for a fact. So be skeptical, but be well-balanced. Be open-minded. You know, don't be so closed off. And this is one thing I always say. Don't be one-dimensional. You know, because if we were all one-dimensional as humankind, then we know that the Earth was flat and we all fall off eventually when everything becomes overpopulated. But that's not how it works in this world, in this universe. We have to open our minds up. We have to theorize. We have to have different ideas and concepts. We have to push things forward and just look at it from outside the box, you know, because we don't have all the answers. And just get a typical digital recorder. You don't have to spend all this money and get, like, crazy gadgets and gizmos or whatever. Listen to your body. Use your digital recorder. Make sure it's quiet. And ask questions. And then give it time to answer. And it takes time. Sometimes maybe you'll be there for a day. Nothing will happen. Next day you go back, you'll get some random voice that comes through that you have no clue why it's there.
Yeah, which is what we've been finding a lot the longer we're at a place, the more activity we have.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Nick brings up a really good point. If you're a skeptic, you have to be able and willing to let go of that. And if you're a believer, you have to be willing and able to let go of what you think the paranormal is and might not be. So you kind of have to find that middle ground if you're going to do this kind of work.
Bother you?
Not at all. No, not at all.
Actually, I welcome them.
I
do, because I love the discussion of that. It doesn't bother me one way or another. You know, I've had skeptics. I do this event tour that I go around the country and I invite people to come investigate for a night with me. And there's been a skeptic and there was a believer, and they were together. And the one person was like, "I'm a skeptic," and this one was like, "Oh, I believe everything." Like, cool, awesome, you know? I'm not here to prove anything, so it doesn't really make a difference to me. I go because I love the history, and these people love the history, so let's talk about the history. And whatever happens, happens, you know what I mean? That's how I look at things. And then you can have the experience. If you experience that, question it yourself. I'm not putting questions into your own head. You should be the one that makes up your own mind. I'm not here to, like, tell you something different. But the greatest part about that whole situation was we left the recorder on this part. It was this old location that we were in, had a lot of history. It had it was a music venue. It had like a band thing, and it was really quiet, and nobody was talking. There was like 15 people just watching on the edge of their seat. We left the recorder. I honestly thought we were gonna get anything on the recorder. I was gonna play it back. You hear my voice talking. And I go, do you like it when the band, I said some question, do you like it when the band plays or whatever? And it was quiet. And then we played it back, and you hear this voice come through and goes, I like it when the band plays, just like that, clear as day. And I showed it to him, and everyone's like, oh my God, together? And I brought it over to him, I'm like, do you hear that? He's like, no, I hear that. How is that possible? I go, your question is good as mine, man. I'm searching for it.
Last question.
Do you have any rituals that you do, like, you know, before a shoot or any, before, like, your, I guess, project?
I really don't. There's some times where, like, maybe I'll pray, or, like, I went to Westminster Abbey to get the blessing, you know, or there's been a couple times I've had blessed medals with me, but, I mean, those are so rare and far in between that it's, I think I fall on the side of, I really just kind of try to put my head in the right mental space and, you know, go in hoping for the best and that, hoping that nothing bad will happen and then I'll come home with nobody else, you know? So.
What do you do? I never asked you what you do before. You have, like, batteries charged?
Right?
That's this ritual. Batteries charged.
Yeah, it's so funny as, again, as the director of photography on it, and we're in there, my whole mindset is documenting their experience. So I think by default when I'm doing that, I have these walls up where I'm just not fully open and experiencing things the same way you guys are. But it's always happening because I was a skeptic 100% going into this. And there's always those moments that happen that you always get a nice kick out of, like, so what do you think that was?
I love it. Yeah. I love it.
To me, this is, I was joking with Rob. I'm like, every time he has an experience, I'm like, well, it's Robbie's first fight mark. This is like Christmas or something for me.
I'll never forget his face. So we were at a location recently for season 2, and he's up in this old attic. And you'll see it during the new season. But you come down, and we're all isolated, and these voices were coming through so clear. But it was validating information that we didn't know about the story, but he talked to the homeowner, and he knew a couple other things that we had no clue about. And he came down, and his face just dropped. He was like, oh, my God. We'll never know what I just experienced. But those are the moments, like, we live for, you know?
Yeah, I mean, without giving away too much on that episode, it's literally stuff that only the homeowner and me knew, and the answers and words coming through, I don't know how to say this without giving away too much, but it was literally like,
just tied it all together.
It was speaking straight to what I knew, and it was completely mind-blowing. So it's those are the moments where you go, I don't know, I can't explain that.
Yeah, rituals, I try to do 100 push-ups before I go in, because I know I'm not going to work out in the next couple days. It's horrible, honestly. You really do have to eat right. Health and physical mentality is like a key to this, because it's really grueling and impacting on your body so bad, so bad.
I just got a Nutribullet for it, because I couldn't take it anymore. So I now blend my meals.